All right, what's up, everybody? This is Zach. I'm back with Justin. We're doing Breach of the Week. This week's Breach, we sort of seem to have a trend here of like finding breaches in places. Like if you have a company that is breached, like that's upsetting. Like it feels like, come on, man, I bought something from you. Just be cool. Don't shut down my accounts and make me get new credit cards.
Don't lose my stuff.
But when you get breached by a government agency, I think it is more impactful, you know, partially because, you know, we have an expectation of our data being secured on government networks. But as you've talked about in previous episodes, sometimes those are the most vulnerable networks because they don't have the money to sort of keep up with it. But this one was particularly impactful, and it's called Blue Leaks. And the article that we found on this, it says an anonymous group. I don't know if it was actually anonymous or if the group just declined to identify itself, but they received, they took and then released, 270 gigabytes worth of materials from police departments and FBI offices. Around 200 police departments, FBI offices. And within the data they had memos, emails, the officer's personal information. I don't know, like it doesn't really say whether or not it's got any sort of like information on like people who have been arrested or anything like that. I mean, a lot of that stuff is public anyways, which is kind of interesting, but so the anonymous group, I guess maybe got it, but they're saying the release actually came from a group called Distributed Denial of Secrets or DDoS Secrets. And DDoS Secrets announced on their Twitter, because hacking groups have marketing teams now, that the collection includes 10 years of data from 200 police departments, fusion centers, and on law enforcement training and support services. And this is continued quote, among the hundreds of thousands of documents are police and FBI reports, bulletins, guides, and more. You know, again, a lot of this stuff, like the bulletins and guides, like that's probably stuff you could have gotten just from going to the website. But I would say, like, especially in the atmosphere right now as a police officer, you probably don't want your personal information being released out. And who knows what other stuff, like fusion centers deal with some pretty, like I doubt there was classified stuff in this, but you don't know. Fusion centers are multi-agency centers, usually run with combination of local, state, and federal law enforcement. And, you know, depending on what they do, not all of them sort of dig into intense anti-terrorism stuff, but some of them do. Like New York City, you know, I'd imagine a fusion center that's dealing with a massive metropolitan area probably has some pretty sensitive information they wouldn't want out. So, I mean, regardless, that's a big deal. That's a lot of serious information that's been released. And again, it sort of hits the same conversation we've had earlier where, you know, we sort of think of these agencies as maybe being on the forefront of hacking, even sort of doing it themselves, being, you know, red teamers, and being able to sort of hack, but that, you know, it seems like protecting their own house seems to be not working out very well. Here we go. To clarify, I guess, so Anonymous actually was who stole the documents. And then the DDoS Secrets was the one who released it, which I guess is a combination of people, but you know, it's another major government hack, which is not good.
Yeah, and looking at the additional information here, initial analysis revealed that some of the files contain highly sensitive information such as ACH routing numbers, international bank account numbers, financial data, as well as personally identifiable information. PII.
PII.
And images of suspects listed in requests for information and other law enforcement and government agency reports. The National Fusion Center Association said that it appears that the data published by BlueLeaks was taken after a security breach at NetCentral, a Houston-based web development firm. And just kind of flipping over to the NetCentral website here, they come to be a web group of website developers, and they actually have comments on their side about the breach here. But the comment from the National Fusion Center Association says, this is from the NFCA, preliminary analysis of the data contained in this leak suggests that NetCentral, a web services company used by multiple fusion centers, law enforcement, and other government agencies across the United States, was the source of the compromise. NetCentral confirmed that this compromise is likely a result of a threat actor who leveraged a compromised NetCentral customer account in the web platform to upload, feature, and introduce malicious content, allowing for the exfiltration of other NetCentral customer data, which tells me that on the back end, stuff wasn't totally segmented.
Yeah. And I'm rereading some of this. It sounds like the DDoS Secrets founder, so they shared it. This is sort of confusing. There's like three different accounts that we're trying to put this together.
So basically the way that I understand this is that you basically have a threat actor who exfiltrated data,
which would be anonymous, I think, in this case, right?
Yeah. Would be a treasure trove of information. And they just hand it over to distributed denial of secrets, DDoS secrets, and they're the new WikiLeaks alternative. They basically publish caches of previously secret data.
And then what's interesting is like the comments that we talked about earlier from DDoS Secrets, they actually are from Emma Best, who is the founder of that. So this is not, they're not, I mean, I guess I don't know like what the, I'm sure storing this stuff somewhere is probably a crime in some way. But at least Emma does not seem to be overly concerned. If Emma's being quoted in Wired magazine and I think The Hill was the other, it was like the originating article that I saw. And then this is also on Krebs on Security, which, you know, is a fairly well-known InfoSec website where they've got some more detail. But yeah, it's definitely, you know, this is another major sort of embarrassing situation that involves some pretty high-level law enforcement agencies, you know, including the FBI, which is responsible for investigating a lot of these leaks anyways. So, you know, again, I think what you had talked about previously in just sort of discussing the challenges of government agencies keeping up with cybersecurity, you know, and how we're supposed to trust, you know, agencies that can't sort of keep their own house secure. You know, I don't know what to do short of, you know, I hate to throw money at a problem, but this seems like in many cases, that's the issue, is just there's not enough money going around to these agencies to sort of protect it. And this, looking into it, there's some motivation here that obviously, you know, they reference, I think, a few different protest groups and stuff as well as being involved in this, but I think Anonymous was the actual group, you know, which that's not even, I don't know if that's actually a specific team or it's people who sort of just associate with them when they go on attacks. But, you know, there's political motivation behind this as well. Let's see here. Yeah. So I guess some of these groups have actually been targeting police operations since 2011, it looks like. So this isn't even the first time that this has happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I think these groups have been under attack for a little while. But as you were saying earlier, Zach, like, you know, I'm not sure if it's totally the case in this exact instance with the blue leak exposing these files, but you know, when it comes to government agencies and institutions, like there's just like we've kind of talked about in previous episodes, by law, like they're required to make some of this information public or kind of like the framework of information public for their constituents that they serve.
Right.
Right. And, you know, all of the luxuries that a private organization would have and their ability to keep things completely private, you know, within their four walls, and they don't have to disclose anything. Like, governments don't have that same luxury. Like, they have to publish addresses of, you know, of their internet address blocks. They have to publish applications out to the edge for the world to see and to access. So, and they have to publish other, you know, services or technologies out to the edge so their constituents can use them. And that can be a challenge to secure, right? It would basically be like saying, I'm going to try to secure my house, but I'm also going to give a potential would-be attacker the blueprint of my house. So they can see where everything's laid out and organized. Yeah. They can see where all the windows are located. They can see where all the doors are. But the assumption is that I've secured all the windows and doors, and, you know, it's kind of up to me to go around and secure all those things. But the person who's attacking already knows, like, basically what they're going to go after and what their targeted ingress to the building is. Right. So it's like, I don't know, it kind of, just my opinion, like, for government agencies, you're kind of already on your heels a little bit when it comes to cybersecurity and defending your institution.
So what are your thoughts on, like, how should a, you know, organization that is storing, like, there's gotta be some strategies to maybe try their best. Cause I mean, it's not something that's going away. I mean, I think we're moving towards much more. I mean, so the advantage of having the government open in this case and transparent and accessible is the fact that, you know, it provides more access to government, like, more than has ever existed. That evolution seems to be happening really quickly, particularly with everything that's going on with the pandemic, because, like, now you can't go into the DMV, you know, on a whim and go get your license renewed and all this other stuff. You know, so a lot of agencies are going to have to start thinking about this and how they're conducting business, because it does not look like the pandemic's going away, at least in the interim. Certainly in some of these huge states, I mean, California, Texas, they're having major, major impacts right now. So, you know, I would not be shocked if they don't go back into some form of lockdown. So as agencies are trying to, you know, still do business, they have to conduct business. You know, what are some strategies that they could use?
Yeah, I foresee that we're going to see a lot more government related breaches starting to come up in the news more and more. Yeah, you know, just as you get more people forced to go online, I think it's just going to increase the exposure that that was there previously. You know, the other piece to this too, and I can't remember if we talked about this before, Zach, in previous episodes, but, like, we've definitely talked about, like, you know, government's inability to basically hide stuff. Yeah. The piece I don't remember if we talked about was the role that third party vendors play in supporting government entities. And in this right here with the Blue Leaks exposure is one example of this, is that when you look at government and government technologies, generally speaking, it's supported by vendors and third parties, right? So, like, it's a third party providing a service or an application that the state basically buys or leases or basically presents as their own to their constituents. I'm totally making up this example, but, like, an example of that would be, you are trying to stand up a tax portal for an organization. So a state is trying to stand up a tax portal for their constituents to come in and pay their taxes online. The state doesn't make that tax portal. Like, 95% of the time, they're hiring a third party to come in and develop that tax portal on their behalf. And more often than not, that third party is also supporting that portal on behalf of the state. And when we look across, like, all governments, state, local, municipalities, whatever the case may be, a lot of times it's saying states made a lot of stuff public. And you have these vendors come in under the guise of basically the lowest bidder who can do it for the least amount of money to stand up these like critical apps and infrastructure for government. So like,
so even if they had the money, they're still going with the lowest bidder anyways, because of the process.
Yeah. And I mean, think about it. Like, and from like, just a public oversight standpoint, you have consumers who are scrutinizing budgets who don't always understand the difference between maybe like what is a low bidder offering between the high bidder. And it's not like they may not even understand like the technical differences between a low bid and a high bid, which could be very material. Rather, the only thing that you can objectively measure is price, right? Like that's the only way that you can objectively say like, what's the difference between, you know, vendor A and vendor B, when I technically don't understand like what they're proposing. It's like, oh, yeah. I guess, you know, everything seems equal. I mean, there's a difference in price and I know money. I can measure the difference in money. I know the difference between $1 and $2.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and then we hear is just like here we are, just, we're just kind of like exacerbating like an already giant cybersecurity issue by saying like, you have vendors coming in as low bidders and, you know, and I'm not speaking for every vendor, but there are vendors out there who definitely cut corners. And they shortcut stuff because they're trying to make up for like all the money that they lost on like the low bid, you know, from having to do it right. So, and this is, and I can't speak for Net Sentinel also in this BlueLeaks case, but, this Net Sentinel is like another example of a third party who was basically hired to support wide scale government operations. And you basically have these giant watering holes for like attack actors, you know, and threat actors, right? It's saying if you're a threat actor and you can find like these third party watering holes, by the way, I don't think I'm telling anybody anything new, but they are a treasure trove of information.
Right.
Right. It's just who it is. Like you look at all these like state governments, local governments, you know, large law enforcement fusion centers, just the scope and scale and breadth, they're going to have a ton of information because likely it's about all the consumers within the entire state.
Yeah.
Right. So, right. I mean, if you're a threat actor, you can find one of those that, I mean, they're going to be rich. Just the nature of the beast.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure like if you look at the, you know, in this case, it was 200 agencies and that can range from, you know, major metropolitan police department and fusion center that probably should do better, should know better. But it also includes, you know, like a small town agency where the town, you know, the city or town may not have an IT department at all. And there may be no, you know, use policies in place. So they're using personal computers and everything else on there. You know, the network is just a standard commercial line on a, you know, whatever the cheapest router was that they could set up so they could run a few computers off of it. And there you go. And you tap into state networks on that, you know, using login information. And now this little, you know, sort of self-built ad hoc crappy network that was never meant to share highly sensitive information is now accessing it. And it's just that vector. And that's, I think we were talking about it as well. Just, you know, again, this stuff happens so fast, like technology evolves so fast and you need to evolve with it. And right now it's really challenging for bureaucracies, which are supposed to, you know, be stewards of people's tax money and, you know, and you look at things in different ways. It takes a lot longer to sort of make acquisitions and purchases, or I guess not acquisitions, but purchases and signing contracts and stuff. And, you know, which is good. Like as a taxpayer, you want them to do due diligence, but at the same time, like, you know, if you can pay a little bit more and have some security on there, then like, let's do it. As a taxpayer, would much prefer knowing that my and my fellow citizens' information is secure for a little bit more money. And that also, you know, you got to the crux of the lowest bidder problem that continuously plagues the government anyways, and the large private organizations that capitalize on that and will do whatever they can to get the contract, and whatever the minimum is, they'll meet it or they won't. Who cares, as long as they get the contract in place.
Yeah. Yeah. I rarely meet vendors in this space who will self-select to go above and beyond what the contract says, right? Like most people have bid it based on a minimum set of guidelines. Very few that I know will be like, you know what, maybe the minimum isn't enough and we should basically self-select taking these extra steps.
That's bad business, right? I mean, if you're trying to make profits, you know, and you're only looking at the bottom line, that's the nature of it. And, I think that's the difference between working with a company like New Harbor Security, www.newharborsecurity.com.
Yeah, perfect.
And some of these other larger companies that maybe, you know, I'm not saying that there's large, like being a large company doesn't necessarily mean you're bad. I mean, there's lots of, you know, incredibly awesome large companies, but certainly like having some accountability or, you know, like in this type of situation, I mean, like if you're securing your organization, you know, your business agency, whatever, with a large company, you know, larger organizations have a built-in risk management portfolio that basically allows a certain degree of, you know, yeah, like we can operate at a very, like we could follow that very low standard and maintain it and keep the contract. And if it goes bad, you know, they have it built in that they can pay for it. Whereas like, you know, a smaller company that, you know, this is a part of a much smaller portfolio, there's a lot more hands-on. There's someone who's going to answer the phone locally, you know, in many cases, or certainly, you know, there's someone who's there to answer 24/7, an actual person, you know, it probably does provide a degree of like, there's more accountability, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, and of course that depends on capabilities. Not every smaller medium has the capability of a larger one, but I mean, these are all things that like, again, you don't want a bidding process that just looks at the dollar. You want to make sure that whatever you're hiring is actually going to keep that information safe. And in this case, it didn't. This is now, I don't know, where I think this is the 10th, it's either the 10th or 11th breach of the week that we've done. And then we're only getting some very small percentage of actual major breaches. So
yeah, we're going through a long list of breaches that are out there and choosing the ones that we think that are interesting for the week.
The juicy details. Yeah.
There's a lot. There's been a lot over the last few years too, but I mean, you would think here we are like however many years later and we're kind of, I don't know, they're still coming out at the same velocity. Right.
Yeah. And a lot of it's the same mistakes. You know, it's not like a lot of these cases are not new. And in fact, you know, in this case, this was pretty directed. So this was probably a fairly sophisticated attack. But in many cases, it's just that shot in the dark, you know, throw a bunch of lines in the water and eventually you catch something where there's no intent. You know, the malice is only in that, you know, they want to sell your stuff on the dark web. They don't really care who you are, what you're doing. In this case, this was very targeted. It's very specific. You know, it was essentially a concerted effort to embarrass law enforcement. And as a law enforcement agency, you have to sort of assume that like you always have a sort of that level of actor against you just by the nature of the business, right? Like there's people who want to just embarrass law enforcement for a whole host of reasons. And then, and you're dealing with much more sensitive information. Like you're dealing with active investigations that could have, I mean, there's, you think about just some of the criminal evidence, like some of that stuff is pretty personal. And I mean, there could be photos and videos and, you don't want that stuff getting out. And so it's really important that, you know, law enforcement takes in, you know, additional steps to really protect this stuff. And again, without knowing the full extent of how this happened, it's hard to sort of sit on a soapbox and shake my fist at them for not protecting it. But, but 200 agencies, I mean, like that's 200 that were not prepared for this. and agencies at the highest level. Like it's, we've got to do better. So that's BlueLeaks, 270 gigabytes. If you are a law enforcement agency or organization and you would like assistance in securing your data, contact New Harbor Security, www.newharborsecurity.com. Remember to like, share, subscribe, tell your friends, get people listening. Email us at pwned@newharborsecurity.com if you've got stuff you want to talk about or listen to. That's our Breach of the Week. Justin, thank you.
Thanks, dude.
See ya.